save me. I know you. Come on, man. Jelly your roll already.
This is CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver, broadcasting from unceded Musqueam territory on the University of British Columbia campus. Hi, and welcome to Synchronicity, talk radio for your mind, body, and soul. I'm your host, Marie Bernard, and today we are speaking with Robert Moss. He is the author of Mysterious Realities and numerous other books about dreaming, shamanism, and imagination. He's a novelist, poet, and independent scholar, and the creator of Active Dreaming, which is an original synthesis of dream work and shamanism. He leads creative and shamanic adventures all over the world, and you can find him on his website, mossdreams.com. Welcome to the show, Robert.
Wonderful to be synchronizing with you, Marie.
Yes, thank you. Well, you do mention synchronicities and how people can navigate through their lives with that. Did you want to start with synchronicities before we jump into the book?
I live by synchronicity, of course. Jung gave us the word. It's a boring word in its origin. It just means things happening at the same time, which isn't the fundamental phenomenon, but at least it enables us to sound scientific and not get tongue-tied when we try to explain meaningful coincidence. I invented a new word, chiromancy. My previous book, Sidewalk Oracles, is all about this. Chiromancy is the art of navigating by synchronicity. The chiromancer is someone who is poised forever to recognize kairos moments, special moments of opportunity that come about when the universe gets personal, when synchronicity strikes. I put together the name of one of the Greek gods of time, Kairos. He's the god of jump time, opportunity time, special moments, and the mancy bit is about divination and acting in divination. So I live this way. Whenever I go out in the morning, I'm poised to notice the first unusual thing that enters my field of perception. And I notice, and Mysterious Realities is full of stories about this from the roads of everyday life, which become magical when you're operating this way. It's full of moments when synchronicity is so incredibly precise and custom made for you, you can hardly believe that hidden forces behind the curtains of our ordinary reality are not interfering, meddling, interceding for good or bad in everyday life. So synchronicity is the way that I live. And by the way, Murray, it's the dreamer's way of operating 24/7. When we dream in the night, we get out there. We travel to other realms. And my book, Mysterious Realities, is about that too. But through the play of synchronicity, when the universe gets personal, we sometimes feel that the powers and intelligences of a larger reality are poking through the curtain walls of our ordinary understanding to bring us awake.
Beautifully said. Thank you. So the name of the book is Mysterious Realities, A Dream Traveler's Tales from the Imaginal Realm. So can you tell us what you mean by imaginal realm? Because it almost sounds like you're saying that it's not so imaginal, like there's actually you're going someplace.
Well, the word imaginal is different from the word imaginary. We don't know how to use the word imaginary. We say it's only my imagination, dismissing something that might be altogether real. The realm, the imaginal realm, is a realm created by the confluence of human imagination and intelligences beyond the human, where there are temples, cities, palaces, schools, places of initiation and adventure. And it's a place where mystics and shamans and poets and creators have always wanted to go. I was talking with a friend who's both a composer and a university professor the other day. He said that all of the good things he's done have been done by going into places in the imaginal realm where he can hear the music he hasn't quite finished yet or hasn't even conceived yet and watch the performance on stage. So it's about this realm of true imagination. And as I say, scholars and mystics and poets and creators have always wanted to go there. So the book Mysterious Realities is about traveling to such realms. It's a book of stories, of adventures. It's not a how-to book. But if you read the stories, you might want to learn how to do these things for yourself because it's so exciting and it's so much fun.
And you teach a lot of classes and you also have a Facebook group all about active dreaming. Is that right?
There's a community page on Facebook called Active Dreaming. There's another one called Robert Moss Books. I teach all over the world. I teach in the mountains of Transylvania. I've taught near the ancient site of Ephesus in what is now Turkey, in what used to be the Greek Ionia. And one of my stories is about things that happened there in the precinct of the great goddess Artemis or Cybele. So I have a very good time on the roads of this world, Marie, teaching people how to dream again, because we almost lost of modern life. So many people are going through a dream drought. They don't remember dreams of the night. They don't know how to travel authentically into other realms. They go after plant medicine or something else because they've lost the primal powers of dreaming. And they go through this world like sleepwalkers, not noticing that the world is alive and conscious and will speak to you if you pay attention. So the stories in the new book come out of my adventures in this world and in worlds accessible from this world, because the doors to the other world open from wherever you are. And the art of real magic is being able to bring something from another world into this one. So that's what it's all about.
Cool. So I'm curious, Robert, when I was reading your book, there's a story, I think it's one of the first stories, where you're talking with, it sounds like basically like the angel of death or the lord of death. And I wasn't clear whether, I guess you had slipped in the airport. I wasn't clear if what led to that dream was an actual accident at the airport, or what parts of that were real and what parts of that were imaginal, and then what parts do you believe are actually true but just on another plane of existence?
Well, thank you. That's the first story in the book, a storytelling of crows. And I'd like to comment a little bit about it because it's a wonderful synchronicity story embedded in that tale, which you might like to hear given the title of your show.
Yes.
I've had a personal relationship with death all my life. I mean, remember, I'm the boy who died and came back. That's the title of my spiritual memoir. I was pronounced clinically dead in a hospital in Hobart, Tasmania, when I was 3 years old. And then the doctor said with some embarrassment to my parents when I came back, oh, your boy died and he came back. So without going through the early part of my story, I've had a close-up relationship with death all my life, and I've grown accustomed to talking to death in a personified way. The death that I talk to in the first story takes the form of Yama, who is best known in Hindu and Buddhist traditions, who can take a terrifying form or a friendly form. I mean, sometimes when I talk to him, he speaks like an Oxbridge-educated Maharaja, very elegant, very genteel. But he always, when he talks to me, wants to put his noose around my neck, which gives it that sort of primal quality of just so scary authenticity, because Yama, according to tradition, takes the soul out of the body with a noose. So in the opening story, you see me slip at Seattle Airport. That actually happened. You see me thrown into an alternate reality where I have a conversation with Yama, a personified form of death, and we make a deal. It's like Scheherazade's deal. I have to keep on producing stories that entertain death every day, or else he'll take me out. So the whole book is framed front and back. There's a similar story, not involving Yama, but involving a kind of owl that in the south of France is called the Grand Duke, giving me a similar message. And within that story, Marie, I tell how I went on at a retreat near Seattle in the Pacific Northwest, a place called Mosswood Hollow. There's synchronicity. Moss goes to Mosswood Hollow. I don't own it. They never heard of me when they named their place. I'm leading one of my writing retreats. Writing is a state of conscious dreaming. It's maybe the coolest writing retreat on the planet. And to goose myself up for my own writing, because I like to do my own exercises, I start writing a story is within a frame story. The frame story is the writer's made a deal with death. Yes, just like the one described earlier in this story. And I start writing about a Roman centurion whose girlfriend is a Phoenician witch who's good at dreams. Then I'm on my plane, having left my writing retreat, and I'm wondering what's going to happen next, because my antenna always a quiver when I'm in motion. What's going to come up now? What chance encounter? What meeting with a stranger will illuminate what's on my mind that day? An extraordinary woman comes down the aisle. She seems very tall, well over 6 feet, in her high-heeled black boots and her top hat. She's dressed all in leather. On her hands are gloves with cut-out fingers with great death's heads on the back of the gloves. This is physical reality I'm describing right now. This is not a dream of the night. This is not a shamanic journey. This is happening on a plane in physical reality. She sits next to me, of course. A little man sits next to the window. She puts him in there. And she starts the conversation by looking around and saying, I like this flight. all the seats are full. Actuarially, don't you know if the plane's going to crash, 20% of the seats will be empty. So that's how the conversation begins. I'm looking at her. And eventually it becomes clear that her profession is dominatrix. Now, S&M is not my scene. So the conversation becomes a little bit sketchy, back and forth, long silences. Then she draws in a long breath and she says to me, with knowing nothing about me, she says, "Do you think the dead appear to us in our dreams?" I say, "Absolutely." She says, "Oh, good. My ex turned up in a dream last night. You know, he was shot in the face in a diner last year. It was in the newspapers. He told me, he was a rock musician, he told me he's got a great job now. He's doing special effects and music for the dreams that are being made behind the scenes of people to dream. What do you think about that?" I say, "It's a wonderful story." And it goes on. Then she says at a certain moment, sniffing, "I'd love to read a story told from the point of view of Jezebel." And I'm scratching my memory to remember the Bible. And she says, "Oh, you know, those Phoenician witches were so good at dreams." It's as if her dead husband or someone is whispering in her ear that I started writing a story about a Roman centurion whose girlfriend is a Phoenician witch who's good at dreams. And to go very quickly to another part of this encounter, which I put in the book, this is just so. This is exactly as it played out. I'm not hyping it one iota. This is exactly as it played out. She then says to me, after another sniff and another long pause, "Oh, I love crows and ravens." "Of course you do," I say. "Do you know the collective noun for group of crows or ravens?" "You're going to tell me," I say. She says, "Oh, yes, yes. Do you know?" I said, "Well, yes, it's a murder of crows and an unkindness of ravens." I'm feeling pleased with myself. And she sniffs again and says, "Oh, everybody knows that." "No, Robert, there's a noun that can be used for a group of crows or ravens. You don't know it, do you? You're going to tell me." "Yes, it's a storytelling of crows or a storytelling of ravens. Do you want to know why?" "Oh, yes, I'm sure you'll tell me." "Well, I saw this one," she says. "I saw a gathering, a storytelling of crows. And one crow was trying to tell the rest a story. And obviously he wasn't a good storyteller because at the end of his performance, the other crows pecked him to death." Now, remember, this is happening within the context of my starting to write a book, which begins with the writer making a deal with death. And unless he entertains death, he's going to die. This is being played out as if the universe has custom tailored with extraordinary detail and specificity something that exactly fits my situation. That's in my book. When I say it's a book of just so stories, in other words, real experiences with no hyping, with no add-ons, that's what it is. It's a book of experiences on the roads of this world and the roads of the other world. And if you're conscious and fully alive, you can step back and forth between the two.
Thank you, Robert.
Hey, thanks for supporting this show. You can subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Just search Synchronicity Mind, Body, Soul. And remember to rate us with 5 stars so other people can find the show too. Namaste.
CITR and Timber Concerts present Cloud Nothings with guests Nap Eyes and VA at the Imperial on Tuesday, November 6, 2018. Tickets available online at www.timberconcerts.com and at record stores all over Vancouver. See you there. Timber Concerts and CITR present Wild Nothing with guests with Men I Trust, Wednesday, October 31st at the Imperial. Tickets are available online and at Red Cat Main Street, Red Cat Hastings Street, and Zulu Records.
We are speaking right now with Robert Moss. He is the author of Mysterious Realities, A Dream Traveler's Tales from the Imaginal Realm. And you can find him at mossdreams.com. So I'm curious to know, you mentioned earlier in the hour that you look for synchronicities as soon as you start your day. So what are some synchronicities that you've noticed already just today?
Well, it's interesting that I couldn't access my big desk computer just now. It just won't let me enter my password. This is strange and unusual. So I'm speaking my little traveler having a laptop, which is working perfectly fine, but it's a little bit, you know, unusual. That's a little bit strange. Earlier today, there was a truck parked at an intersection one block from my house, and the driver is just sitting there through several changes of traffic lights. And I actually wondered, is he okay? Is he dead? Is he having a health crisis? I probably would have gone to check, except a mailman, a postman, pulled up in his van next to the car, and I knew that, you know, if there's anything wrong, the mailman would probably notice and do something about it. So I've noticed a few oddities today, nothing very large, but my pattern when I am at home is I go out in the morning with my little dog. He's a funny little dog called Oscar, which suits his theatrical temperament. And he's a sort of synchronistic catalyst for me. As I walk my little dog to the park, things happen. So I'll give an example, which is not from today. It's an example of how this plays in everyday life. So one day, I have a theme on my mind. Sometimes I go out and I put a question to the world. In other words, I have an intention for guidance. I put it to the world just as I might put it to my dreams. But on this particular day, I don't have a particular theme in my mind, but I'm thinking about, well, I do have a theme in my mind, but I haven't set a formal intention. I'm wondering whether I can handle two different projects. They're coming up in the same season. They're similar. They might be mutually competitive. Time and energy are perhaps not infinite. So I'm a little bit worried about whether I can juggle two projects. That is on my mind. And I'm walking my little dog. Big guy, a stranger, gets out of a big truck with a big box on his shoulder. He looks at me. He looks at my tiny dog, my 22-pound dog, and he says, well, he can't kill both of us at the same time, can he? And I'm sort of stunned. I'm not usually, you know, short of words, but I have nothing to say immediately. I stagger up the street with my dog, wondering what just happened. And then it hits me. He can't kill both of us at the same time, can he? I've been wondering if I can handle two projects. I've just been told by the stranger in the street that you can't do both things at once. You're probably going to have to choose. So I'm given a decision here, and it's a difficult decision. How am I going to communicate to somebody I'm about to disappoint that I'm not going to do the project I did agree for him? Well, I wait an hour because I don't want to make the phone call. Then I make the call, and he is upset. He's not happy. And then I tell him what happened on the street with the stranger. He can't kill both of us at the same time, can he? And then the whole mood changes. The guy on the end of the phone starts laughing. He's, oh, Robert, you and the synchronicity stuff, I get it. I would have had to make the same decision. No bad feelings. We are fine. So out of that encounter on the street, words from a stranger, I not only got the right decision on an issue that was on my mind, I got the way to impart it, to communicate it in a human, humorous, lovely way. So that's an example of a particular form of everyday oracle. I put that story in a book called Sidewalk Oracles, by the way, that the Greeks called a kledon, K-L-E-D-O-N. The Greeks had many kinds of oracles. Everybody's heard about Zeus, Delphi. Some people heard about the Oracle of Zeus, the oak tree at Dodona, and other Greek oracles. But this was a wonderful, popular, everyday form of Greek oracle. You listen to words from a stranger. You listen to the first words or sounds coming out of silence or out of the confused hubbub of a city, and you get a message for the day from Matt. So that's one of the ways that I listen for synchronicity on an everyday basis. I don't push it. And I would note that living by synchronicity isn't just about getting a specific sign or message. It's about beginning to practice field perception, to recognize patterns, to recognize themes that rhyme in a day or a week or a life. It's about developing a poetic sense of what rhymes and resonates, of how symbols pop up again and again. And beyond all of that, it's about learning to live on the mythic edge, to recognize that playing around you are larger stories and the powers that Jung called the archetypes. Many of the stories in my new book, Mysterious Realities, are about how the archetypes, the gods, the goddesses, the spirits, the deceased, the greater powers come into play in everyday life and might be the secret makers of the phenomenon we call synchronicity.
Thanks, Robert. And even just the book, Mysterious Realities, was surrounded by a synchronicity with your editor.
Yes. You want to hear that story?
I would love to hear that story. Yes.
So this is how this book came about. I mean, this is my 25th published book. It sounds like a lot, but I have dreamed that I have a contract to write 68 books, and I'm not there yet. So it's my 25th. So I've been leading a workshop in Berkeley, California, and I'm walking with my coordinator to dinner at the end of the workshop, and I'm talking about three things. The first is Pegasus, the winged horse. Actually, I'm talking very specifically about how, in one version of the myth, it is the stamping hooves of Pegasus that open the spring of the muses, the spring of inspiration. So that's the first element in my conversation. By the way, this is the way I talk all the time. There's nothing unusual about this. I'm talking about Pegasus. Secondly, I'm talking about the idea that I have a lot of almost complete stories that I've been writing and filing away over the years. I have almost complete stories that might make a book that I've been thinking of calling Mysterious Realities for some time. I'm not quite there yet, but I might have it. And thirdly, I'm talking about the idea that we're living more than one life at the same time. I'm talking about parallel lives, parallel realities, which is one of my favorite subjects to explore as a teacher, as a dreamer, and as a writer. So three things: Pegasus, almost complete stories, I must be living twice or more. And I look across the street, and there, of course, is Pegasus, the winged horse, on the front of a bookstore. So I say to my friend, "But excuse me, I've got to go in there right now." I run across the street. Berkeley motorists are kindly to pedestrians. They do not run me down. In the threshold of the bookstore at eye level, on the shelf in front of me, I see my surname, Moss. I see the title of a book, Almost Complete Poems. It's close. Almost Complete Stories, Almost Complete Poems. Next to it, I see a book whose title is I Must Be Living Twice, the parallel lives, parallel realities theme. So three for three, three times makes the charm. So I feel I've been given a very big pat on the back, a very big secret handshake in favor of the project I was starting to discuss. Next day, I'm having lunch with my favorite editor. And before I even tell her the story, she shoots me between the eyes. She said, "Robert, the book I'd like you to do next will be a book of your travel stories, your travels in dreaming, your travels to what you call the imaginal realm, your travels to realms of the dead or alive, your journeys to the astral realm of the moon, your travels with synchronicity in everyday life. I'd like a book of your stories that people can read simply as a book of stories and be thrilled by." I said, "You know what? I received this message very clearly yesterday." So in 5 minutes before the wine is even delivered, we've made a deal for the book, and that's how the book came to publication. So there's synchronicity at work for you. By the way, all of this is intensely practical. If people think I'm a mystic, I will say I'm a practical mystic. This stuff works. And paying attention to dreams and synchronicity will open doors where no door seems to be available and confirm whether you're on the right track or not.
Now that, I think, is the difference between you and someone like, I mean, I believe in synchronicities, and when I feel a strong synchronicity, I do look into it. But if I was walking down the street and saw a Pegasus on the bookstore, I'd probably be so focused on where I'm going with my friend that I would think, "Oh, should I go in there? Oh, no, no, we're too busy." Whereas you dropped everything and ran across the street.
Well, I'd just been talking about Pegasus. If you just been talking about Pegasus, Marie, you might have behaved differently. If you're just on your track with your schedule, with your friend. But I was talking about Pegasus. I was talking with fierce passion because this story about opening the springs of the muses is so important to me as a creative writer. It's one of the ways that you sometimes get things going. You open the floodgates of inspiration. So I was talking about Pegasus, not merely as a casual remark, but with some passion. And by the way, synchronicity is mobilized. Synchronicity is facilitated by the feelings and the emotions we are carrying. But in general, you know, we're not going to find magic around us unless we're carrying magic inside. We're not going to observe this stuff and be able to act upon it unless we are open and available. So, you know, the chiromancer, again, the word I invented, the one who is poised to recognize and act in special moments of synchronicity, is forever open and available, willing to say thank you when the world gives you a sign that is important, and you know it in your shivers. You know this in your feelings. It's easier to feel this in many ways than to talk about. Everybody knows that special moment of meaningful coincidence when time seems to move differently. Sometimes you feel that time has stopped. Sometimes you feel that something from outside time is reaching into your world of time to make things happen. And although Jung famously in his essay on synchronicity calls it an acausal connecting principle, we often feel when synchronicity strikes that there is a hidden hand. We often feel that there is a secret order of events. There's something beyond the usual that is coming into play. If many people in our world are closed to this kind of thing, it's because they are stuck to schedule, stuck to routine, stuck to the headphones, stuck to the expected, and not willing to get off the map. I mean, synchronicity multiplies in interesting ways when you're willing to accept change. You're willing to accept screw-ups. You're willing to accept that your plans are shattered. You've missed your connection. Many of my most interesting chance encounters leading to really incredibly interesting things have come, for example, when I missed a connection. I'm flying around the world all the time to lead my programs. I teach all over the world. And often, you know what? If you're an air traveler, you miss a connection. And my antenna are quivering more strongly than normal when that happens, because when your plans get screwed up, a trickster energy comes into play. And it puts things together in an altogether different way. So when I'm on a plane, for example, I've been asked to move seats to let somebody sit with somebody else, or someone else has changed seats, I will turn to the person who sits down and I'll say, you have a story for me. I know that because I'm sitting in the wrong seat, or you just changed seats. So what is your story? And out of that opening will come incredible things. I love stories. I'm a storyteller. I love to help other people find their bigger and braver story and live it and tell it so well it wants to take root in the world. So because I'm a story lover as well as a storyteller, I'm magnetic for stories. Stories come to me in my travels. They become part of my ability to keep the really unusually hectic international travel schedule that I keep, because the stories keep coming, because I'm a magnet for that. People are magnets for other things. It's the law of attraction. It's been put in silly ways by the New Age, but it's a real law. It's always operated. What you think and feel draws things to you and repels things from you. It's always been like that. So your ability to notice and capitalize on synchronicity and the form that synchronicity takes are all going to be generated and decided by the thoughts and feelings, the energy and the quality of attention you are carrying. It's as simple as that.
Thanks, Robert. Is there a way that you keep track of those synchronicity? Like, some people who teach about synchronicity suggest having a journal specifically on synchronicity, or do you just kind of go by feeling, and if it feels like a synchronistic coincidence, you go in that direction?
Well, I keep a journal, of course. How can you not keep a journal? I mean, I'm a writer. I can't understand how a writer cannot keep a journal. I can't actually understand how any sentient, literate being can live without a journal. For me, a journal is the most important book I will ever write. It's as fundamental as that. I published 25 books. I will still say, I'm sure that on my last day in this world, I will still cleave to that statement. My journal is the most important book I will ever write. And I write all sorts of things in it. I've tried separating things out, a book of the day, a book of the night, a book of observations and synchronicity from the day, a book of dreams from the night. But it's all a seamless web for me, really, which doesn't mean it's a wodge of, you know, material you can't sort out. I title all my reports and I write one-line summaries of them. I do a whole process with my reports, and then I might put them in separate folders. But my basic chronological journal, which will start with dreams of the night when I remember them, which is quite frequently, and continue through the first episode of the dog walk or the first episode on the airplane going off in the morning, that is my basic document. And it becomes your scientific logbook of all sorts of things, because the study of synchronicity is fundamental to our understanding of reality. We learn, we confirm what physics tells us, which is there is no separation between mind and matter at any level of our multidimensional universe. It's all interweaving. Basically, consciousness is the fundamental building stuff of our reality, and the observer effect generates events and phenomena. The moment we look at something, it puts it into manifestation. So how do you understand these kinds of things? How do you understand precognition, telepathy, and other supernormal faculties like that? By keeping your journal. That gives you your first-hand ability to track these things. One of the major themes in Mysterious Realities, the new book, is parallel lives, that maybe we are all living in this moment uncountable parallel lives with parallel selves, with doubles doing different things, slightly different or radically different in other realities. This is what physics tells us is probable. This is not some New Age superstition. This is what the many worlds hypothesis in physics tells us, that we are living right now in one of uncountable parallel universes. Well, how would you know about that firsthand, and how would you figure out how to do something with it? You keep your journal. You keep your journal, and you will notice if you keep your journal with discipline over time, because this is a practice that requires discipline, a daily discipline, you'll notice eventually, if you record enough dreams, that you go again and again and again into another reality, maybe several other realities, where you are moving forward. at the same rate as you're doing in regular life, but you're doing different things with different people. You're still with your ex, for example. You're still in the old job. You're still in the other country or the other city, or maybe it's further away. Maybe you're doing something radically different. So I've been tracking some of my parallel selves, the ones I like tracking best, are writers like me, but they're writing different books. And they're living somewhat different lives. I track them through my journal. And this becomes, as I say, a scientific data book, scientific in the best sense of the word. The knowledge that is relevant to science is state specific. It's knowledge that's relevant to the field of inquiry. So if you want to know about parallel realities in a human way, you need to track yourself through your dreams in particular on those tracks. Jung came to believe close to his death, and there's a story about Jung in the afterlife in Mysterious Realities, a very interesting one. Jung came to believe close to his death, and he said this, that we live continuous lives in other realities, and we perceive these in dreams. Now, dreams are sometimes memories of the continuous lives we're living somewhere else. I write about this from experience, not from theory. I have theories, I have models of understanding. You hear me express some of these now, but I think the easiest ways for people to get into this kind of material is first of all to read stories from those who've experienced these things firsthand, then have a go at trying to experience them for themselves and keep a journal. The journal has so many uses. It'll get you through tough patches in your life. It's a place where you dialogue with yourself or your soul. It becomes the only dictionary of symbols you'll ever need because you'll be tracking your own symbols. It becomes the scientific data book and all the things I've talked about and much, 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 much more. So the journal is the central tool for all of this.
Thank you so much, Robert. That's really helpful. And now you talk about, we were just talking about the many worlds theory and how we might have all of these like infinite lives that are happening simultaneously. But there's also the theory that time isn't linear, that it might all be happening at once.
There is indeed. I'm a subscriber to that theory, but I'm more than a subscriber to the theory. I teach people, and I write about this in my books, of course, including Mysterious Reality. I teach people to check in on the life experiences connected to them, that other personalities are living in other places and times. I teach them to recognize that we are all time travelers, especially in dreams. In dreams, we are forever, for example, going into the future. We scout out challenges and opportunities that lie ahead. This is actually part of our survival kit, part of our personal radar system, if we'll only use it. I couldn't be talking to you, Marie, if I had not avoided death on the road three times to my certain knowledge by noticing where death was waiting for me on the road in certain situations and applying the information and avoiding the encounter with death on those specific days. Very, very practical stuff. We travel to past times. We go back to earlier passages in our present life. We visit personalities in other places and times. Sometimes we're observers. Sometimes we find ourselves in their situations, and then people start talking reincarnation and other stuff. I'm a bit of an agnostic about reincarnation, but I know for certain from my experience that we are connected to personalities in other places and times. I mean, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing now had I not been connected with a man who's better known in Canada than the United States, actually, who came from Ireland to the American colonies in the 1700s and became King's Superintendent of Indians living amongst the Mohawk in the Mohawk Valley. I became connected to his life when I moved to geography, to a situation not far from where he lived and did his thing and ruled like a tribal king in Mohawk country. I eventually had to learn the Mohawk Indian language because of the connections I was making in my dreams and visions. So I know that for me, for example, his story lived up until the year 1774 when he died before the American Revolution. I know that his life and mine are strangely intertwined. I'm not talking reincarnation. I'm talking about a specific connection with a personality in another time. That connection was so close, I had to write three historical novels with pages and pages of footnotes and a Mohawk Indian glossary written by me where I retranslate Mohawk words to separate myself somewhat from that time. For me, his life and mine were and are going on at the same time. So choices I make now might impact him, and choices that he might make might impact me. And there's a certain karma flowing back and forth. So I absolutely subscribe to the idea that in the multidimensional universe, it's all happening once. And in a very practical way, we can learn to step outside linear time and then step back into it at different periods, past, future, or parallel, if we learn the practices, for example, that I call active dreaming. So this is important stuff. It's fundamental to our understanding of reality. And my goodness, it can be incredibly powerful and magical in life. If you think, for example, that you have a parallel self who's doing something interesting, how about the idea that you could not only look in on that parallel self and learn from her? Maybe she's the artist or the musician you never dared to become, or the writer you delayed becoming until late. Suppose you could look in on her and borrow some of her tricks, borrow some of her skills, or even sit down and have a cup of tea or a glass of wine with her and make a deal by which you will support each other. Does it sound crazy? Well, I judge by results. I know this kind of stuff is not only not crazy, but I've seen people, in addition to myself, do precisely this, reach to a parallel self who's done things they have not yet accomplished in this life or done them sooner, and bring gifts and specific knowledge from that parallel event track into this life. So these are some of the things that become possible when you not only recognize the matter of theory, that time is just a convenience. Einstein was so clear about that. He was so clear that time is not a fundamental reality. It's a convenience for human minds, which are limited. Once you recognize that time is a convenience, linear time is not a fundamental thing, then you're poised, if you have the courage and imagination, to do something with that. Like, for example, learning that you can scout ahead of yourself and make better choices based upon information about the possible future. Looking at how you can go back to a younger self and play mentor or friend of that younger self in a vulnerable time. Understanding, as I say, how you could reach to a parallel self and bring some gifts and lessons from her life into your present life. So this is what I teach as a leader of a school of active dreaming, which I founded. But most of all, in Mysterious Reality, it is the source of some remarkable stories, which I think will juice and inspire you to give this a go for yourself.
Thank you, Robert. Absolutely. Reading these stories has made me really a lot more curious. But I have so many more questions now for you. Taking it back to learning the Mohawk language. So you're having dreams and people are speaking to you in another language, and then you couldn't understand them, so you learned the language and then you were able to converse?
Well, let's tell it as a story, shall we? Let's lay it out as it happened.
Sure.
So I'd been living in or within the shadow of New York City, living a very fast-track life as a New York Times best-selling author of popular suspense novels. And I was bored. I wasn't happy with my life. I wanted to do something else. I wanted to live closer to the land. So I drove upstate and I found a property, a rural property, a lot of land and a rundown farmhouse. And I'm wondering if I should live there. And I sit under an old white oak tree behind the farmhouse. And I'm thinking, if I'm going to move here, there has to be a sign, because I know no one in this area. It's new territory to me. And a red-tailed hawk, a female from her size, so I didn't necessarily know that at the time, starts circling overhead, dropping lower, squalling in a language I feel I should be able to understand. And drops a feather between my legs. So I built the land because of the hawk. One night, I'd just come back from Ireland, actually, and I was thinking about the double spiral that is on the curved stone at New Grange, and I'd already discovered Sir William Johnston was thinking about his life. I find myself lifting out of my body in the bed. It's the twilight state. It's between sleep and awake. It's an easy time to spread consciousness, and I'm not unfamiliar with leaving the body and traveling in other ways. I've done it since I was a kid. So I'm enjoying the sensations of flight, and I'm flying, it seems, on the wings of a red-tailed hawk. It's very physical, Marie. I catch a thermal. I see things from a different angle. I feel myself being pulled north, 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 up across Lake Champlain into what is now, I guess, Ontario. Or maybe it's Quebec. Maybe it's somewhere near Montreal. It feels more like Montreal than Ontario. But there's no modern highways. I'm in a different landscape, and I'm pulled down into a cabin. There's a beautiful native woman, an elderly woman, grandmother, speaking to me in a cadenced musical language I do not understand. And as she speaks, she's stroking a wampum belt, a beaded belt with a she-wolf and two human figures. I'm thinking Romulus and Remus, no, wrong culture. And I'm fascinated by her, but I do not understand her. Her eyes are glinting, glowing, and I come out of this lucid dream, this night journey, fascinated and mystified. I mean, who is she? Well, I began to learn a bit about Johnson, the history of the area. So I guess she might belong to the Iroquois or one of the related people. I'm not sure. Then synchronous. And so I have more encounters. They multiply. And they're usually in this in-between state in which it's easy to embark on lucid dreaming. So they're lucid dreams. But they're not dreams I have set up. I'm not trying to control this. It's happening. I feel I'm being called. And then synchronicity, I meet my first friend of the Iroquois. He's actually an Onondaga scholar. And I describe the dream, and I show him the drawing of the belt. He says, oh, fine, let me show you. He's working for the New York State Archives at the time. He opens a locked steel cabinet. He takes out a wampum belt with a she-wolf and two human figures. Says, Robert, we believe these are the clan credentials of the mother of the wolf clan of the Mohawk people, the Kanyankahaka, from 200 or 300 years ago. And if it was such a person calling you in the dream, she would speak with the belt of office, the belt of authority over her shoulder, because we say that we speak important things over the shells of life. So this gives me shivers, and it goes on and it deepens. And I eventually understand that I have been called by Arondiwana, a woman of power, and a Zedzots, a dreamer, one who dreams, a shaman, a healer, mother of the wolf clan, who lived 250 years ago and knew the Irishman with whom I have a connection, a distant family connection, as well as an affinity. And that she seems to be calling to me because she needs survival information in her time. She needs to know things like, how do we survive smallpox? She needs to know things from her future. And although I'm no expert on any of this, I start doing historical research. I was once a junior professor of ancient history. I know how to do research. And a lot of this is actually reflected in my novel, The Firekeeper, which writes about her in the guise of fiction and writes about the white man I feel connected to, Sir William Johnson. And all of this eventually leads me to go so deep into the study and practice of shamanic dreaming that I decide to give up the life I've been leading altogether and do this full time. So it was these experiences with the call from an indigenous woman, an Aboriginal woman from a long time ago, that eventually called me out of the life I thought I'd been leading and put me on the track I'm on. And it was all accompanied, of course, by synchronicities, chance encounters, things converging, coming together. And often that sense in going to a certain place, and perhaps you felt this too, that the veil's thin and suddenly around you, at least the holographic memories are people who lived there before. So you're joining their lives and their dramas and their loves and their battle for survival. So this, more than 30 years ago now, was a great watershed in my life. The call of the woman who brought me to her flying on the wings of the red-tailed hawk.
Thank you.
Hey, thanks for supporting this show. You can subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Just search Synchronicity Mind Body Soul. And remember to rate us with 5 stars so other people can find the show too. Namaste.
Tune into Post Rock Friday from 10 to 11 with your host John P for the best in post rock, drone, ambient, experimental, and noise.
We are speaking right now with Robert Moss. He is the author of Mysterious Realities, A Dream Traveler's Tales from the Imaginal Realm. He's also the author of many, many other books, and you can find more information about his books and his active dreaming school at mossdreams.com. So, Robert, I'm curious, what is the difference between active dreaming and lucid dreaming?
Well, lucid dreaming is something that we do, but we do a lot more. I mean, active dreaming really has 3 modes of practice. First of all, it's a way of getting active with your dreams. So I've taught people to talk about these things with a partner or with a group in a way which makes it easier for us to be heard, easier for us to get non-authoritarian, non-intrusive feedback, and easier to be guided towards action. We need to take action from our dreams, not just leave them floating. Sometimes we need to go back inside a dream because clarify the information so we can act upon it. So first of all, it's a way of getting active and social about our dreams, recognizing that there are safe, smart ways to tell a dream or another personal story with guide rails. So, you know, you don't go crazy. You're not falling over yourself. You tell your story really well, and people give you feedback in a way you can hear. So, for example, we learn to say, when we tell our story as simply and clearly as possible, we learn to say to someone telling that story, if it were my dream, I'd think about such and such. We never tell people what their dreams or their lives mean. So it's a very respectful and energizing, mutually reinforcing way to discuss these things. And we always ask for an action plan. Okay, you dreamed this or that. What are you going to do about it? You're going to wear the color red. You're going to do some shamanic shopping. You're going to call him up. You're going to call the divorce lawyer. You're going to go back inside your dream and make it the portal for a journey. I mean, you're going to go back into that place of fear so you can overcome that nightmare terror. So one of the most important things I've devised is a simple four-step method for sharing dreams or stories. We call it the lightning dream work because it's meant to be quick and it's meant to focus energy. And once you learn that technique and practice it with a friend or a group, you find you are deepening friendships, you're deepening relationships, you're making a place for soul and survival that is also highly entertaining and highly energizing. So that's the first thing. It's a way of getting active about dreams. Secondly, it's a way of entering the dream space consciously. In this sense, it does some of the things that lucid dreaming purports to do. But we have simpler and more powerful techniques than a lot of the lucid dream approaches will tell you. For example, I teach that the easiest way to become a lucid dreamer is to start out lucid and stay lucid. What do I mean? Well, we spend a lot of time in that hypnagogic state, that liminal place between sleep and awake. It's very easy if you can learn to lie in horizontal meditation, another of my phrases, watching the rise and fall of images in the middle of the night or before you get out of bed in the morning. Very easy to find that you are opening a gate to a lucid dream adventure. One of the core techniques of active dreaming, also relevant to a really charged, high-octane version of lucid dreaming, is what I call dream reentry. You have a dream. It has some energy for you. Maybe it's fear. Maybe it's mystery. Maybe it's romance. Maybe you want to talk to grandma who was in your dream last night. Maybe you want to brave up to the bear who was inside your bedroom and find out why the bear is inside your house. Maybe you want to go on with that romantic idyll with the lover in Tahiti or Atlantis. Well, I teach people you can take a personal image. You can journey in it. In the workshops, we use shamanic drumming to power the journey. We don't use plant medicine or hallucinogenics, but we use drumming to power and focus the journey. You can make your own personal image the gateway for an adventure, and in the process, you might find you have direct access to the whole field of non-local mind. We teach all sorts of other things, but these two techniques already you'll find rarely in the lucid dreaming books, and they're simple, and they're practical, and they're powerful. And thirdly, the third mode, this is relevant to the title of your program, Marie, this is a way of dreaming in everyday life, of navigating by synchronicity, of recognizing that wherever you go, eyes open in the physical world, you're in a field of dreams. The world is speaking to you in signs and pop-up symbols and patterns of repetition and rhyming incidents if you'll only pay attention. So, you know, it's a lot more than lucid dreaming, but certainly lucid dreaming is part of what we do.
Thank you, Robert. A thought just came up for me. So I'm working in mental health right now with people who have like clinical diagnoses of psychosis. And I feel a little, my mother also had schizophrenia. And I feel a little scared, to be honest, to delve into that world because it seems so close to the world of delusion.
Well, I can understand your reservations and your nervousness given that context. Let me say this. I mean, the shamanic approach to these things is to not to deny or brush aside the images, however terrifying, from the dark forests of the night that might be associated with delusions, schizophrenia, etc., but to learn to go boldly and consciously into those forests and get the person who's lost there and confused there and delusional, who get them through. Let me give you an example of this, which is not from someone diagnosed with schizophrenia or psychosis, but from somebody who's having a really bad time. I worked some time ago with a Vietnam War vet, American Vietnam War vet, combat lieutenant, probably a brave man in battle. He was haunted ever since the war by the ghost platoon. He lost every man in his platoon in Vietnam. They all died. And in his dreams, they're after him because he's the survivor. He not only has survivor guilt, he feels he's got ghost sickness. He feels that the ghosts of his dead men consider him a rat and a renegade and a traitor, and they're after him. I said to him, let's go back into the paddy fields. Let's go back into the scenes of these horrible dreams. I will come with you. I'll hold your hand. And let's talk one by one to all these dead soldiers who are haunting you. And he did that. I was with him, but he essentially did it for himself. He met and talked to each man, man by man, all the dead, all the unrequited dead, all the vengeful dead, and made an arrangement with them and came to an understanding, and together were able to help them find their way to where they needed to go next. And the nightmare stopped and he was released from the burden. So that's an example, not exactly from the field you're talking about, but from a field of trauma, a field that mental health professionals would have certain recipes for, which might include drugs and medication that drive away the dreams. This approach is one that values any image, any dream that is authentic and belongs to you. and would maintain that. And Jung was right there too. Jung also would maintain that any image that belongs to you can be worked if you're willing to work, and you might need guidance, you might need help, you might need stabilizing. But any image that belongs to you can be worked and pursued in the direction of healing and resolution. So that's what this is about.
Thank you. No, I really appreciate that, because reading your book and hearing you speak, it inspires me to want to do active dreaming, but then I have that fear of, well, what if I get sucked into this? I mean, there's a story in your book about how you weren't sure whether you were dreaming or awake.
Well, what is the difference, Marie? Are you sure that you're not dreaming right now?
No, well, I'm not. After reading your book, I'm not sure.
How can you be sure that you're not dreaming right now? How can you be sure this conversation is not a dream right now? And by the way, one of your parallel selves is probably going to wake up at some point and say, I had this strange dream. I had this weird conversation with a guy who, you know, is talking about this and that. What does it mean? I mean, from your parallel self, your life is, for your parallel self who is waking somewhere else, your parallel self right now is the dream. I have no evidence I'm not dreaming now, except that I think I'm dreaming in a physical body, which is vulnerable and fragile. I know that from the occasional pains and fatigue in this body. I know I better not jump off a rooftop and think I can fly. I know I'm not dreaming in that sense, but in other senses, I think I'm dreaming right now. I'm dreaming in the body, with the body, and I'm going to do the things that a conscious or active dreamer can do, Marie. I'm going to recognize I have the power of choice. I'm not a victim. I'm not bound to someone else's interpretation of reality. I have the power to face up to my monsters, whether in their sleep, in my sleep, or in my anxiety, and go beyond those fears and find the courage that will take me beyond fear. By the way, courage is not the absence of fear. It's the ability to go beyond fear because something stronger is with you. So I'm going to recognize as an active dreamer, in any world, I am a chooser. And I'm going to test the boundaries of possibility and not buy into any self-limiting belief about reality. I'm going to test just how far I can go and just how far I can rearrange reality. I'm not going to jump to the New Age nonsense of saying I create my reality 100%, but I do recognize that my attitude will generate whatever I encounter in waking life, whatever I'm open to a considerable degree. So if I'm feeling nervousness or anxiety about a situation waking life or in dreaming, I'm going to find a way of confronting that anxiety on the right ground and going beyond it. I'll tell you one more personal story about this. When I started living in North America, I started dreaming of bears. Now, I grew up in Australia. We have no native bears. You've got the koala. It's very cute. It's not a bear. I had Arthurian dreams, of course, of European heritage. I dreamed of the bear as our ancestors encountered it, but I had not really dreamed of the bear as it's known as a medicine animal throughout North America. Well, I start living in North America, and I dream again and again that there is a giant bear, and it's in my house. And in the final dream in the sequence, before I do something about it, the bear is in my bedroom, and it's so enormous, it can't possibly fit in the room, but it does somehow. And I'm scared because this thing is bigger than me. It's not attacking me, but it is huge. I'm frightened of something bigger than me. So I decided then, Marie, to do what I would counsel anybody else to do when they're shackled and bound by fear and anxiety. I decide I will step back into this space, and I will meet the bear. I'm sitting in an easy chair, no drumming, no help of any kind, just my intention and the energy of my fear. And I am right there in front of the bear, Marie. It's realer to me than the physical environment. And the bear is enormous, and I am scared, and I have to will myself to step up to the bear. And the great arms of the bear are all around me, and I feel it. I think, oh, my God, my ribs are going to be crushed. I've had it, and this is vividly real. But then the dreams, the bear's embrace turns out to be gentle. It's a gentle bear hug, and suddenly we're the same size. And suddenly I feel the bear encouraging me with its mind to mind, to look at the heart center. And I look at the heart center, and between the heart of the bear and my heart, there's something like an umbilical pumping life force back and forth. And I know in a just so moment, I'm joined to the bear at the heart. And the bear, mind to mind, not in human speech, says to me, call on me. I'll show you what you need to be healed, and I'll help you to heal others. And since then, more than 30 years later, Marie, I call the bear, I call the medicine bear into my circles. And I call the medicine bear into my life when I need it. It's evolved into great mother bear. And she is endlessly protective and healing. She is medicine. as Native Americans understand. And that came to me spontaneously. I didn't seek it. I didn't understand it. I was frightened of it. But I discovered something that might be relevant to you, Marie, and to your listeners. You know, the price of making an ally of this kind, making a spiritual ally of this kind, is to brave up. Every angel is terrifying, said Rilke. The true angel, when you first meet it, is not on a Hallmark greetings card. The first encounter with the angel will be terrifying. It's a wonderful poem by Rumi about that, about Gabriella's appearing as angel of the Annunciation to Mary. Mary is so scared of the appearance of the angel, she jumps out of her skin. She jumps out of her body. She's so frightened by the appearance of the angel. And the angel, because Gabriel is the patron of dreams and astral travel, the angel, the archangel Gabriel, says to Mary, "You flee from me, from the seen to the unseen, where I am Lord and Master. What are you thinking of?" So there is a price to be paid for our spiritual growth and our growth in true power, spiritual power, and that is to brave up. We will be set many tests, and there's no point in dodging them. Eventually, what we fear is what we must face.
Beautifully said. Thank you so much, Robert. We are just about out of time. I wish we had more time to discuss this. It's so such a fascinating discussion. So the name of the book is Mysterious Realities. If you found this discussion interesting, you're going to find the book even more interesting. Mysterious Realities, A Dream Traveler's Tales from the Imaginal Realm. You can find Robert at mossdreams.com. Is there anything that you'd like to add before we close the show, Robert?
Well, I think I'll say what I say to strangers on planes. I'm a storyteller. And one of my great passions is helping people to find and live their bigger and braver stories. And to apply that to anyone listening, you know, the challenge in life is to step out of our tired, old personal histories into a larger story, to find the living myth, to become the living myth, to live the myth that is our bigger and braver story. When you do that, you find courage and you find clarity for all the choices in life. And that's what all of this is about for me, helping people to find their own bigger and braver stories. And by telling my own stories, I sometimes succeed in arousing people to look for their own and awaken to the bigger stories that are hunting them.
Mm. Thank you so much for your time. And thank you for being with us. Again, the name of the book is Mysterious Realities, and you can find Robert Moss at mossdreams.com. Thank you to Robert for being with us, and thank you. I want to send you so much love. Be well. Namaste.
Up next is Parts Unknown with DJ Chris Arific on CITR.
The AMS Comedy Club presents Comedy Night, the spooky edition. Come to the Pip Pub on Tuesday, October 30th at 8 p.m. for some laughs and refuge from the vampires roaming the night.
The trouble with being a vampire is you have to be invited in to go in.
Like, come in to the bar, please. Invite us into the bar, please.
Okay. Invite us in!
This show features the talents of Jake Spencer, Neil Webb, Robert Peng, Susan Thompson, Ed Hill, Rory Dunn, and Lark Miller, an alum from The Late Late Show and Comedy Now. Admission is $5 at the door, and AMS Stand-Up Comedy Club members get in free. No one will be turned away for lack of funds. I mean, unless you're one of these folks.
Okay, let's just go, Big Kumara.
Have a good night, guys.
Yeah, you have a good night.
Big Kumara is vampire-owned and operated, and so we can always get in.
It's the hottest night spot for vampires.
Thank you.
Dr. Payam Akhavan is an international lawyer and professor at McGill University in Montreal. He delivered the 2017 CBC Massey Lectures, In Search of a Better World, A Human Rights Odyssey, and on Friday, November 2nd, Dr. Akhavan will be at UBC to discuss the challenge that the rise of populism poses to the international justice system. What does President Trump's recent anti-globalism speech at the UN and the laughter received tell us about the state of multiculturalism? The UN and the ICC are increasingly viewed as elitist and a threat to national sovereignty. Are these concerns legitimate? How can they be addressed? Come to the School of Journalism, Room 104, on November 2nd at 3 p.m. to learn, discuss, and enjoy some free pizza. For more information and to RSVP, visit ageofpopulism.eventbrite.ca.
Put
Broken Pencil, the magazine for zine culture. CITR 101.9 FM and Discorder Magazine are proud to present Kenzine Vancouver. Kenzine is the city's giant zine fair and festival of underground printed arts, happening from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. on November 4th, 2018 at SFU Woodwards, which is at 149 West Hastings Street. Kenzine is a zine fair and festival of underground print culture, celebrating Vancouver's zines, comics, and works of underground printed weirdness. Over 300 zines and comics on display and sale. You won't find this stuff anywhere else, ever. Only at Kenzine. Also, don't miss the Global Zine Exhibit and our panel on the rise of Vancouver Noir. For complete festival lineup, visit kenzine.ca.